A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on June 21, 1987, in the series Until We Take the Shape of Christ, entitled People on the Way, in Great Shape. The scripture reading is Galatians 2, verses 17 through 21. The text for the sermon is Galatians 4, verse 19. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
It is the goal of God for our young people that they take on the shape of Jesus Christ. But that's His goal not only for our young people, but for us all. For it's very clear in the text that we have been looking at in this Pentecost Trinity series that it is the destiny of us all that we should be shaped after the image of Jesus Christ. Writing to his people at Rome, Paul said, God knew his own before ever they were and predestined that they should be conformed to the image of his Son, that Jesus Christ might be the elder child with many sons and daughters in the family of God. In his letter to the church at Corinth, he said, and we all, as in a mirror, reflect the splendor of the Lord. And he said, and we are transfixed, being transfixed into the likeness of the Lord from splendor to splendor. Such is the influence of the Lord who is Spirit. And in his letter to the church at Galatia, he said, I am in travail again with you until you take the shape of Christ. Throughout the New Testament, it is laced with that divine intention for our humanity, with all the diversity that is represented in the individuality of each of us, with the multiplicity of our stories and the places from which we've come. There is yet to be that commonality. There is to be a commonality in the core of our being, which is a reflection of the image of Jesus Christ. And when you connect that with the Old Testament understanding upon which it was based, you know that in those chapters in Genesis at the beginning, we are told that we were created in the image of God. And then in the New Testament, we are told that Jesus was the very image, the very stamp and image of God. And now we are told that we are to be the image of Jesus Christ. And it's really mind-boggling if you stop to think of it for a moment. We were created in the image of God. We marred that image. Jesus Christ came, the representation of the image of God in our midst. And now we are called to reflect Jesus, who reflects God, which says to us, I guess, that the very life of God is to be alive in us, and that our lives are to be a reflection of the very life of God. That really is mind-boggling, but that's it. Jesus, the reflection of God, reflecting His glory. We, beholding Jesus, reflect His glory from splendor to splendor, thus reflecting the glory of Jesus. We are reflecting the glory of God, and we are realizing His purpose for us in creation in the first place. Paul, in his own testimony to this reality in this letter, which was read a moment ago by Peter, says, I am crucified with Christ. Paul is dead. Nevertheless, I live. But the life that I now live, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Old Paul died, new Paul was born, but the new life of the new Paul was the very life of God. Amazing idea. God in us, the promise of Pentecost, realized by the life of God within us, which is continually growing more and more into the shape of Jesus. Paul, writing to the people at Galatia, was writing to his own spiritual children. We all know that raising children is a difficult business. On Father's Day, we salute fathers who have made it. But Paul had his problem with his spiritual children as well as sometimes we do with our natural children. And so in the letter to the Galatians, if you would read it this afternoon, you would find that it is very confrontative, that it is really filled with angry rebuttal, that actually there's some bitter cynicism in that letter. The people in Galatia heard the gospel. Paul presented to them Jesus, the grace of God that set them free from darkness and superstition and guilt. And now he heard that they were starting to fall back into the old trap of religion, ritual and legalism and the kind of religion that's oppressive and binding. And he said to them, having begun in grace, will you now fall into the bondage of the law? He was really upset. But then his anger and his agitation moved again to that yearning, nurturing love when he said to them, I am in travail with you again until Christ be shaped in you. Until you take the shape of Christ. For finally, all Paul wanted was the fullness of their human existence. And he knew that for them to be the highest and the best was for them to realize God's intention, which was for them to reflect the image of Jesus, who is the image of God. And so he says, I am in travail. I'm actually experiencing labor pains over you. It's like I have to give you birth all over again. But I won't let you go. I'll keep praying. I'll keep laboring in prayer until I see you take the shape of Christ. In a few moments, we'll baptize infants and we'll claim the promise of the faithful covenant God. And we will look to Him to bless the nurture of which Peter has just spoken, the nurture of parents and the nurture of this community. And we'll know that there will be times, like with Paul, we'll have to confront, and there will be times we'll have to correct. There will be times when we will guide, and there will always be times, or it will always be right, that we should love, that the magnetism of that love may draw them until finally they are themselves personally appropriating the life of God through Jesus Christ and taking His shape. Sometimes we wonder if it's going to work. But when we've been to the baptismal font, we who believe in the covenant of grace and the faithful covenant God will hold Him to His word, and we will not give up. We'll keep trusting until we see the seed of faith bursting into life and the shape of Christ being replicated in the life of our sons and daughters. And I suppose that it may be at the time of the birth of our first child that we are as spiritually sensitive as at any other time. I suppose that when, for the first time, we take that little child and we realize that is our flesh and blood, all of a sudden something happens. I've seen it happen over and over again. I remember it myself as the greatest change in my life. Suddenly I say, I've got to clean up my act. I've got to get serious. This is really important. Because this child, this precious child, is now given over to our care, and we know that there is nothing more important in all the world than that that child grow into personal faith and trust and love of God. For the encouragement of you parents bringing children this morning, let me tell you a personal story which has moved me and means so much to me on Father's Day. The first child I ever baptized was my son, my own son, David. And It was in this congregation. And for all of the years of his life, as long as he was in our family, except for 7 years, he was nurtured in this congregation. This is where he worshiped. This is where he went to church school. This is where he went to youth group. And God blessed the nurture of this people so that just last Sunday, he was ordained and installed as an elder in the Covenant Reformed Church in Muskegon Heights. And this past week, Gordon was in Grand Rapids in the law office where he works because he's doing some legal work for the Reformed Church. And Gordon came back and told me that David said to him, to be ordained as an elder in the church was more weighty and significant to him than when 2 years ago he was admitted to the bar. Great Father's Day gift. What is more important? What brings greater joy and satisfaction? Nothing in all the world. It works because God works. And we, with Paul, over against our youth, travail in prayer until they take the shape of Christ. Thank God they will, because he's promised. But it's not only our youth. It is all of us who are called to be transfigured from splendor to splendor, reflecting his likeness. Jesus Christ is the model for our humanity. And I suppose that as we've grown up, we've all had heroes of one sort or another. Many little boys want to grow up to be firemen or policemen, or I don't know what little girls grow up to want to be, but sometime along the line, there's a great baseball star or a football player. We all have heroes. And those heroes captivate our imagination and they motivate and give direction to our striving. Paul says, I have a hero for you. I have a model for you. It is the magnificent model of Jesus. What a lot of images that sets loose. What do you think about when you think of Jesus? What comes to your mind when you name the name of Jesus? What is the characteristic that really moves you? What is there about Jesus Christ that fascinates you? What is there about Jesus that causes you inwardly to want to emulate him? Let me suggest one hallmark of his life. In his prayer life, which was so impressive, he addressed God in a most unaffected, natural, and simple way, using the word Abba, A-B-B-A. It finds its way into the New Testament, the English New Testament, on three occasions, just that way, Abba. It is simply the transliteration of the Aramaic word. In Jesus' day, there was hardly anybody that would pray Abba. The great New Testament scholar, Edward Skillebeck, says that the most significant thing about Jesus, what can be learned about his life, his message, his behavior, can be learned from that word Abba. There was an intimacy and a love and a communion between Jesus and the Father that could only be expressed with the word Abba, which was the affectionate term for Father, almost like our word Daddy. The unique thing about Jesus was the relationship with which he lived with God, the comfort, the peace, the total trust, the total devotion, the absolute obedience, all characterized in that word Abba. And in this fourth chapter of Paul's letter to the Galatians, Paul says that God has sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts so that we are children by adoption. And the Spirit enables us to say, Abba, Father. And in that marvelous 8th chapter of Romans, Paul says, but a Spirit that makes us children, enabling us to cry, Abba, Father. In that cry, the Spirit of God joins with our spirits in testifying that we are God's children. Jesus is our model. And we must pray for one another and for ourselves until we take the shape of Christ. And our human experience is that of people on the way, being transfigured from glory to glory, from splendor to splendor, degree by degree, little by little, until finally, one day, we shall behold him face to face. And John writes, we know not what we shall be, but we know that when we shall see him, we shall be like him, for we shall see him face to face. In the meantime, people on the way, in great shape, the shape of Jesus Christ. On the way here this morning, listening to a magnificent organ concert, an old love song came into my brain. Somewhere, I suppose, out of the unconscious. I don't know many of the words, but it's that song, I've grown accustomed to your face, like breathing in and breathing out. You know it? That's all I know. But I thought, what if in our contemplation of Jesus, we should grow so accustomed to his face that breathing in and breathing out, we simply lisp